Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to CAGDU, about your dog and you. And CAGDU stands for Capital Area Guide Dog Users, Inc. And I am your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor. And, of course, you know our co-host, Mr. Charlie Crawford, passed last month. So that microphone is still going to have a black cover over it for a while, until we decide or interview someone to become our permanent co-host. But until then, we will have guest co-hosts starting this month. So I want to welcome you, my listening audience, to CAGDU, about your dog and you. And good afternoon, and how you doing today, Miss Renee?
Reverend Ray, I'm great. How are you?
I am doing the best I can do. I'm not able to get out and walk my dog like I'm supposed to and can do. And as someone said, if I keep sitting on that couch, I'm one sandwich away from being fat. So so be kind enough to give us our lineup for today.
I would be honored. Well, we begin our show with Stop Dogging Us Around, the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly of Using a Dog Guide. And our guest is John Pax, work at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland, in occupational health and safety, keeps the engineers, technologists, and support staff safe while they explore Earth, the solar system, and the universe. And then in our second half, we will look into Charlie's Corner. Back over to you, Reverend Ray.
And all I have to say, Miss Renee, is that is out of this world for show. So let me go to Stop Dogging You Around, the Good and Bad and the Ugly of Using a Guide Dog. And I don't have a bad right now because, like I said, I haven't been out much to collect a bad. But I do have a good because we still have to walk our dogs during the day to get them the exercise they need to keep their skills up. And when I was on my morning walk, I heard all this confusion and people cussing and hollering and running and all, and some people ran and avoided me. They said, "Oh, that man got a dog." And they, you know, ran around the dog and said, "That's a police dog," and ran across the other side of the street. I don't know if they were fighting or what they were doing. But I'll say this, the good for me is that even though our dogs are not trained to attack people or be aggressive, the fact that it gives you the security that, you know, that you do have a dog, and people give a second thought. Because when I used to use a cane, well, I still use a cane now. You don't stop using the cane because the dog is a live animal, and it can get sick. It can get, you know, whatever. So you have to keep your cane. I learned that the hard way when I got my first dog, but that's another story. But so you do use your cane. But when I use my cane, I sometimes just didn't feel, you know, 100% safe in the street, and because I have had things happen to me, and I know other blind people have had things happen to them, you know, or people taking advantage of them. Like, you know, one time I've been shopping and had a couple of packages, and somebody said, "Oh, I'll help you catch a cab, mister." And I said, "Oh, okay, I appreciate it." And they held a cab for me, and then they put me in the cab. And they said, "Well, let me hold your packages, and I'll help you in the cab." And they put me in the cab, and then I'm sitting there, and the cab driver say to me, Is they coming back? Are they riding with you? I said, what do you mean they come back? Say, well, they went down the street and went around the corner. So they had took my package. And so those kind of things. But that is not a big concern we're having this dog now. So that is my good, bad, ugly use the service dog. That, like I say, and when they first started, and I'll give history as we go along, but when they first started, it go as far back as 1300, and I won't be specific because you can look this stuff up on internet now, that different people started trying to, you know, work, use guide dogs and train guide dogs. But the one thing in Germany after World War, the First World War, the Germans had they was using over 4,000 dogs that they would use in terms of rescuing and the hospital and that kind of thing. And so what they did, they started a school for guide dogs. But they only was using them for soldiers. They didn't start using them for civilians until 1927. But they would use them for just their soldier men, you know, becoming blind from shrapnel and the war and stuff like that. But one of the things that they did was in the training that they don't do today, they actually trained the dog to protect you. So if somebody came near you, that dog would growl. Now, I think that these days they might need to put that back in the training. But anyway, that's another thing. But that is that is my spiel on the good, the bad, and the ugly of using a guide dog. So, Ms. Renee, back over to you, and let's introduce our guests and then go from there.
All right, Reverend Ray. John Pack's work at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland, in occupational health and safety, keeps the engineers, technologists, and support staff safe while they explore Earth, the solar system, and the universe. Over to you.
All right. Good afternoon, John, and how are you doing today?
I'm good, Reverend Ray. First of all, thanks for having me on your show.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for joining us. And we always like to say it's like when you visit our home, you come in, you knock on the door, we open it up, we greet you, shake your hands, not as much now, take your coat, hang it up, you need some water, we go get the water out the box for you. The second time, and from that point on, you like family, you get your own water, you hang your own coat up, and we treat you like family. So, so today we will be kind to you, but after that, you like family. But thank you very much, and I met John one year and one month ago when I was getting my seventh guide dog, and John was getting his first guide dog, which got a really cool name, and that name will be mentioned a lot this month, because guess what his dog name is, Mr. Renee?
Halloween?
His dog name. Well, no, not Halloween, close to it though, but Igor. And I always like, and that song, the Monster Bash with Igor doing his thing. So we're going to hear Igor with all the Mummy movies and Boris Karloff and stuff. So he's a really cool name. So, John, the show is called CAG Do About Your Dog and You. So we want to start out with you. Because a lot of times the occupations that people do and all, you know, with this internet, you can go on internet and YouTube and find out about anything. So we're going to want to find out about you. So tell us a little bit about you. Was you brought by stock and dropped in a cabbage patch, or did somebody put you together? Tell us about you, where you came from, a little bit about your history and life and your growing up, please.
Sure. So I am Korean-American. My parents are both Korean. Obviously, I sound pretty non-Korean. At least my parents definitely sound more Korean than I do. But I grew up in the States, obviously. I was born in Baltimore, Maryland. Spent quite a number of time or months at the Johns Hopkins Wilmer Eye Clinic, and also the incubator. I was 4.5 months premature, so I had I'm blind because of retinopathy of prematurity. I weighed 1.5 pounds when I came out, so it's a good thing that I'm still alive. I went to elementary school in Anaheim, California. My parents moved out there, and then I came back to this area in fifth grade and went to sixth grade and all my other schooling in Prince George's County, Maryland. I went to Eleanor Roosevelt High School and went to college both at Goucher College up in Towson and then finished my degree at Columbia Union College, which is now actually called Washington Adventist University in Tacoma Park. And then I started, and I started work.
Let me ask you this, Nat. Go ahead, Ms. Renee.
No, do you have siblings?
I have one half sister. We have the same father, but different mothers.
Okay. Older or younger than you, John?
She's older than me.
Okay.
Any,
and she doesn't
any
have
sight
any vision
issue?
Problems?
I'm sorry?
She doesn't have any vision problems?
Nope, not at all.
Okay. Okay.
Hmm.
Right.
Interesting. So the way you, well, you are a young man. So then you went through mainstream through school. You didn't go to Maryland School for the Blind, which is in this area. So you didn't go to Maryland School for the Blind. So how did you acquire blind skills as far as learning Braille, learning cane travel? How did that come about for you?
So I definitely was mainstreamed. I was fortunate that the places that I was mainstreamed in had a fairly good program. So when I was in California, I did mainstreaming at Clara Barton Elementary School in Anaheim. And the specific school there, the way that they did blind education was I guess they call it a resource room, right? So all the blind students went to the same elementary, middle, and high schools, you know, the specific schools, and then you would go to regular classes with everyone else. But when you needed Braille, things written in Braille for you, like worksheets or assignments or what have you, then you would go to the resource room and they would do those things. And then orientation mobility was actually taught by O&M specialists that were, you know, teachers assigned to the school system. When I went to middle school and high school back here in Prince George's County, that was a complete VI system or visual itinerant system. So basically the way that works is you go to whatever school you're supposed to go to or whatever school you are assigned to, and the O&M specialist and the teachers of the visually impaired travel to you at your school. So they're completely mobile teachers, and they do whatever they need to do with you whether it comes to brailing things or helping you do O&M or whatever by coming to your school and working around the school area.
You know, John, I'm interested in understanding how many students were in your class. I can remember I originally came from the UK, and we had an accent reduction class, and they would come and take all the kids that were born in other countries or had accents, and they took us out of class, and it was humiliating. I hated it. So how many other students did you have, and did you ever feel the otherness of being taken out of class?
No, I think, you know, if I did notice it, I must not have noticed it enough, because until you brought that up, I never thought about that. You know, it was just, we were so integrated in that I don't think anyone really noticed. I mean, or maybe it's the things that I did that made me not notice. You know, I was involved ever since in elementary school, I was involved in things like student government. You know, in high school, I did ROTC. In middle school, you know, I did student government as well. So I did things that impacted with and for the regular student body, whatever regular means anymore these days. I don't even like using that word.
Right.
Okay, John, that's the music. When we hear the music, we got to pay these people some bills and stuff like that. So we're going to come back to you on the other side. And this is Reverend Radio Ray Razor, your host of CAGDU About Your Dog and You, and our very special guest, Brother John Pack. We're going to talk to on the other side, so we'll be back.
You are listening to CAGDU About Your Dog and You. CAGDU stands for Capital Area Dog Guide Users. We are located in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. But the information we share is for dog guide users everywhere. Again, our host is John Pack. His work at NASA's Guided Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland, in occupational health and safety, keeps all the engineers and all the technologists and support staff safe while they explore the Earth, the solar system, and the universe. Back over to our host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor.
Now, Ms. Renee, I wouldn't point this out if we didn't have anal listeners that would email me and say, Ms. Renee said John Pack was the host. Okay, Ms. Renee know that, but she meant he was the guest, and no, he's not replacing Mr. Ray, even though he might be even though he might rate high on the intelligence scale. Mr. Ray is still going to stay host. He is the guest. John, let me ask you this question: being African American and Black, and coming up as a blind student and all, and some of the things were different for me. Now, you definitely, and I think when I met you, some kind of way it came to that. No, that I was surprised you was Asian because I couldn't see you. No one ever mentioned it to me. And you say, no, I'm Asian, and I sound like a white man. But in that people could see that you was Asian in terms of being blind, in your community, in my community, blindness or disability in the Black community is sort of, it's a shame, you know, because when Black people were born in slavery, if they had a disability, the slave owners would kill them because, they wasn't a good product to them. And that's all they were then. But parents of slavery would hide their disability by compensating, by doing their work for them or like that. So even carried over to the day after 200, 300 years, Black or African Americans still hide a disability or won't recognize a disability in the blind community. And that's something we're really working hard. So on the other side of that, with you as an Asian, how is disability people or persons, and specifically in your case, blind, how is that accepted or looked upon in the Asian community?
So first of all, I'd like to say that anything that we talk about here is my experience. And I think that one of the things that I have a lot of trouble with are people who make generalizations, I guess, about the general entire population of a subset of people, right? I think that many comedians have stereotypes of various cultures, races, whatever, because in some ways, in stereotypes, there's a little bit of truth to it, right? Just a little bit, not completely, but enough that people can do that. So I'll start by saying that, again, it's my experience. But from what I understand, so first of all, I'll start by saying that my parents never viewed me as a, quote, special child or disabled child or incapable child. And for that, I'm grateful. Because if they didn't have that attitude, then I probably would not be where I am today, working around sighted individuals and being a part of sighted activities. I'm a member of the Civil Air Patrol, which is the United States Air Force Auxiliary. I'm a major there, and I'm supposed to get, hopefully, my lieutenant colonel promotion next month or this month. Again, it's all about, my parents initially. I think that I guess it was Hillary Clinton maybe that says it takes a village to raise a child, and I think that's definitely true. But from what I understand, at least from things that I've seen, observed, or heard about in the Asian community, I think a lot of Asian individuals view blindness also kind of as a end of the road kind of deal. You're never going to really get a job. You're going to have to live off of the government. The typical blind man selling the pencil kind of stereotype on the corner kind of comes to mind. And I think the reason why that is because a lot of Asian countries may or may not have access to the technology that we do here in the United States or in some of the more developed countries like Britain and Australia and so forth, and Europe. The whole concept of what JAWS is, for example, if you want to use that example, or what a Braille note is, might not be something that other countries are familiar with. I remember when I was 9, my parents and I went to South Korea to visit, and there was a gentleman who had a some type of disability with his leg that prevented him from walking. And he was at the subway station, and he literally had a cup, and people would walk by and drop money into his cup. And I remember saying to my parents, why doesn't that man work? Or why doesn't that man go to school? Why is that man asking for money from other people? And, my parents had to explain to me that, the types of accessibility options and other opportunities that I enjoy as a child in the United States, not everyone has here. I'm 37 now, so, this is obviously a couple of years back. But, I think a lot of countries still might have those kinds of problems. But I think, overall, if I had to generalize the view of blindness in the Korean-American community or maybe other Asian communities that I know friends who are from those communities, again, blindness is viewed kind of as a charity kind of deal where you basically can't, that you'll need help from the government, that you will not be able to, quote, get a regular job or go to college or whatever. And again, I'm glad that my parents didn't have a view of that sort.
Wow,
that's
great.
I think they should be parents of the year because I think that makes a difference. John, I want to switch up a little bit because we're getting to know John Pack. You're in a relationship, so I'm going to ask you the question that people who are too polite to ask, but they want to know, how do blind guys attract chicks?
Say the question again?
I said, so
how do blind guys
attract chicks, women?
That's a good question. No, I appreciate that. So first of all, I should explain that in my own personal life, dating was very difficult for me. And I don't really know why, because everyone says I'm a very personable person and all of that. But I guess once I found out that they were, they were girls, right? All of a sudden, I thought they were some kind of foreign, amazing specimen that I didn't know what to do anything about, right? So my dating life definitely happened later in life. I didn't really date in high school. I didn't really even date in college. But I always had the desire of wanting to date or wanting to have a relationship because it was lonely, right? I mean, you would see all your friends, and most of my friends are sighted. And so I would see all my friends starting to date and starting to get married or engaged. And, you know, later in life, some started to have families and stuff like that. And I felt very kind of alone. And so I actually started dating late, or later, I guess, compared to the average teenager, because I didn't really start to date until probably my second or third year of college. And even then, it was still very difficult for me to date. I think, you know, again, everyone's experience is different, but I do think that a lot of sighted people, and in this case we'll say girls for me, couldn't go beyond the blindness. You know, what's the first thing you see? You see this guy with a white cane, you know? And unless you work with me or you go to school with me or you serve with me in the Air Force Auxiliary, you don't really know what I can do or what I can't do. You don't really know who I am. You just see the white cane. And that's, you know, I think kind of a hindrance. I never did the traditional dating like people do, you know. I never picked up a girl at the club. I never picked up a girl at the bar. You know, none of that. I actually did online dating. I used eHarmony. And no, I'm not being paid by them to tell you that. you know. Right. There's my plug for eHarmony real quick. But, okay. You know, even on eHarmony, I was on eHarmony for a long time before I actually met my wife. You know, I was on there off and on, I would say, for like 9 or 10 years. And I've met a lot of good people on eHarmony, and I met a lot of bad people on eHarmony. And I probably should write a book about some dating experiences I've had with people, good and bad, because, you know, just like people, people are people, and you meet some great people. And, in fact, I still talk to some of the people that I met on eHarmony still, even to this day. And I've been to, a few of their weddings,
John,
too.
John, let me ask you this before you go on about meeting your wife. So on eHarmony, I know you fill out a form or something like that. Now, did you put blindness on the form ahead of time, or did they find out you were blind after you,
you know,
matched up or whatever?
So it's really amazing that you asked that question, Reverend Ray, because I went through an internal struggle of whether or not I should put that in my profile or not. Because I thought, because of my blindness, if they saw that, if people saw that reading the profile, they may just toss me out from the get-go and not even try to get to know me. But then I also thought that if I don't put it in my profile, then I'm not doing anyone a favor, including them, by not saying who I am. Just like you may have black hair, brown hair, blonde hair, you may be tall, short, skinny, fat, whatever, being blind is a part of me, you know? And so I decided that I would put it in my profile. Now, I did it in a creative way. I wrote at the very end of the profile where it says, you know, something interesting about me. And I said, you know, I am blind, but ask me who I volunteer for. And that's referencing the Air Force Auxiliary. And I also gave a TED Talk. So I said, you know, ask me about my TED Talk. So I was basically proving that, yes, I am blind, but I do things that are different, you know. And you know, if someone had a problem with that going in, then maybe I shouldn't waste my time with them, and maybe they shouldn't waste my time with me.
Wow.
So you had a career on eHarmony, you say 5 years. Some people don't hold a job. I mean, 10 years. Some people don't hold a job for 5 years, and you stuck with eHarmony until you met your wife.
I did try.
Very, very pleasant.
Yeah, so I did
I
did try Match.com for a few months. Didn't work. But yeah, no, I stuck with eHarmony. Like I said, throughout the time. And I eventually met my wife, Anne. We got married in January 19th of 2019. So we're still, fairly newlyweds compared to some people. Yeah. But, you know, people ask me all the time, like, And, oh, wait, let me fix this, too. She is sighted, right? People always want to know that,
okay.
too.
Okay, yes.
But you know, people ask me, oh, is it different being married now? Is it, you know, whatever? And I said, you know, am I supposed to tell you that it's different? Because it's really not. We treat each other the same way that we did before we were married than we do after we're married. And maybe that really is a good sign, because marriage is just, for me, a spiritual first and legal commitment, right?
Wow,
and so I guess if we're treating each other the same before, then really the marriage part just brings the legal or the spiritual and legal commitment together and solidifies that.
Wow. Okay, that's the music, so we're on our station break. But when we come back, I want to embellish on that a little more in terms of how long you and her was on eHarmony. How long? I know she wasn't on there for no 10 years. How long you all was on there, and was she in the same city, and how did you all get together and all that kind of thing? So you'll listen to CAGDU about your dog and you, and our special guest is Brother John Pack. And we're talking about him, and he's the you, and then we're going to tie him into his dog and how his guide dog, Mr. Igor, helps him embellishing his life, be more productive and independent. So over to our announcer.
Well, we want to thank our sponsor, Big Bad Wolf, a Primo pet store located in Northwest Washington, D.C., They carry raw, organic, and premium foods. If your dog needs it, they more than likely have it. They have store-to-door deliveries in the DMV, so give them a call at 202-747-3434. Again, that number is 202-747-3434, and that's the Big Bad Wolf. You are listening to CAGDU, About Your Dog and You. CAGDU is the capital area dog guide users located in the nation's capital. And our guest is John Pack, who works at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center. So if you want mission success, you need a guy like John on your team who helps keep the nation's largest cohort of scientists and support staff safe. Back over to our host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor.
All right. Thank you, Miss Renee, our host with the most. So, John, how long, getting back to your volunteer work on eHarmony, how long was your wife, Ann, on eHarmony before she met you? And was she in this area, in the Baltimore area, or was this started out as a distance relationship?
Yeah, so it's funny. Ann was on eHarmony for a whopping 3 days, and she never, right, yeah, no, and she never paid for eHarmony. eHarmony has a, what they call free communication weekends, and they start, let's say, on a Friday and end on a Sunday night, and Ann thought, well, you know, I don't really necessarily want to pay a lot yet. Let me try this free communication weekend thing. And she posted her profile up there, and she met, you know, a few people on the 3 days time. One of those people was me, and she knew that the free communication weekend obviously was going to end. So I guess she told everyone that she met that she wanted to continue talking to, hey, email me or call me at this email address or at this number instead, because I'm only on a free trial subscription kind of deal. And it, you know, so she really got the best out of the deal, because she never paid, and she was on there for 3 days. So compared to me, who had to pay, you know, whatever 10 years worth of eHarmony bills are, I don't know.
So that's like when they invite you down to look at some property and they give you a gift. Ann ended up with a gift with a free,
yeah,
with a free
she,
trial.
Yeah.
So
exactly, she got lucky off the free trial.
And,
yeah.
And now you in the Baltimore area. Where did she live? Where was home for her?
So Ann actually moved. So she's originally from Massachusetts, but she had just moved to the Washington D.C. area for her to be closer to her mom, because her mom was ill at the time. And she actually came down here to be with close to her mom and, of course, to continue her work. She was working for CVS Pharmacy at the time. And so it wasn't a long-distance relationship per se, because she had just moved down here.
So how long did you all – okay, one moment, Ms. Renee. How long – and you might cover this today. How long did you all talk before y'all physically actually met each other, and where was the lucky place?
So I would say we talked for a couple of weeks. I remember it was February because we started emailing each other. Oh, yeah, I got to also say good job for the marketing folks at eHarmony, because they usually do free communication weekends on specific kind of times of the year, right? One of those
mm-hmm.
free communication weekends is Valentine's Day weekend. So either the weekend before or the weekend after Valentine's Day. And I remember that because that's how we started to exchange emails, Valentine's Day weekend, because we had a lot of snow that time and ice. But and so we probably talked back and forth and emailed back and forth for about 2 or 3 weeks. We finally decided that, you know, it was time to meet, because I always say online dating is great, but unless you actually meet the person, it's all fake until then, right? So we met at a sushi restaurant in Washington, D.C. She likes sushi. I like sushi. And we said, you know, why don't we try that? Now, the funny story about that meeting, though, is I took Metro Access to the restaurant, and the driver actually dropped me off at the restaurant next door to the restaurant I was supposed to meet Anne at. So I went into the restaurant, and I'm sitting in there, you know, whatever, not thinking much about it. And my phone rings, and it's Anne, and she calls, and she says, "Hey, where are you?" And I said, "I'm here. Where are you?" And she's like, "No, you're not." And come to find out, I was next door, and we finally, you know, met up. But I was talking about it with Anne now, and I said, you know, she's like, I would have been really devastated if a blind guy stood me up, you know, like that's just, they don't even want to meet, you know, just, yeah. So it's pretty funny there.
That's funny. And I'm sure Ann said, like, wait a minute, now I'm here. I don't see you. You the blind one, not me. So, John, how did Ann's friends and family, because when Miss Renee met me, and all her friends had a lot of concerns about her marrying a blind person. How did Anne's family and friends react to, you know, is she going to take care of this blind dude and dress him up and put clothes on him and feed him and everything? How did her friends react to that?
You know, the only way I can answer that question is I don't know, because it never became an issue. Now, if they told her something, I don't know about it. And maybe that's the kind of family that she has or friends that she has where, you know, either they don't care as long as she's happy, or they talk to her in private about whatever concerns that they had. And, you know, she addressed those concerns. And once she addressed those concerns, it was a finished conversation, and that was the end of it. I will tell you, and Anne and I have had this conversation before, she said that if I did not have a sense of humor about my blindness and could not make fun of myself, then she would be very concerned and probably would not have continued to date me, because we both have a very sarcastic sense of humor. We pick on each other a lot. I always tell people, you know, if you didn't know that we were married and love each other, you probably would think we were really mean to each other. You know, but we really do love each other. It's kind of a weird way we show it, but, you know. And so I will say that is kind of the interesting little thing there.
I agree
that.
with the sense of humor.
Absolutely, absolutely. So how long did you date before you decided to ask the big question, or did she ask you the big question?
So we dated for 2 years. About the one and a half year mark, we had a conversation where she said probably by the second or third year of dating, if marriage is ultimately not the end result or the end of where the train's going, then we probably should have a conversation about our future relationship. I am Christian by faith, and so is she, and we're one of these folks that doesn't believe necessarily in what I like to call recreational dating, right? Like you have to,
mm-hmm.
the goal should be that you find your partner and then you enter into the marriage that way. And we were both obviously, you know, on the same train because we got married. Mm. But I guess what she was saying is, you know, if you don't want to get married by the second or third or the second
mm-hmm.
or third year, we really need to kind of reevaluate where we are.
Wow.
Wow.
I think
Miss Renee can relate to that. Huh?
Absolutely. Well, I'll tell you sometime off camera, off microphone. Any consideration in having a family? Was that ever on the table?
We discussed it. Obviously, those are – so we used the book Things I Wish I Knew About Marriage. It's written by a Christian author, and I don't remember his name right now. But it gives you different chapters to use. It's a whole book, and each chapter talks about different things, like, you know, how do you handle your money? How do you view family? How do you view chores that you do around the house? You know, things like that. And then at the end of each chapter, they have, like, this little questionnaire, like, workbook thing where you – the idea is that you sit and you talk through the questions, you know, that way you've covered everything thoroughly. And so we used that book when we got engaged to make sure that we kind of knew where we were going on everything. And of course I went through, as I said, we're both Christians. So the church requires us in our denomination to go through premarital counseling. You know, it's a thing you have to do. And so we did talk about children and we kind of came to the conclusion that, yeah, we're totally open to it, but now that we are married, we're kind of in the position where we get to watch our friends' children a lot and spend time with
mm-hmm.
them, and we kind of like the life that we have. Children are great, but, man, your life will change when you have a child forever. And
yes.
we kind of yes. like doing what we're doing right now. So.
Wow.
That's good.
Wow. And the book you referred to, I did hear the author being interviewed on Focus on the Family on that show. I heard that the author of that book, and yeah, it's a
okay.
very good book.
Yep.
I wish
He's
I knew about it.
He's a pretty famous guy, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay.
Our show is called CAGDU, Capital Area Guide Dog Users. So we should probably ask you a little bit about guide dogs. Reverend Ray, you want to, let me ask, what motivated you to get a guide dog, John?
You know, it was time. I have a job. You know, I was married. You know, it's kind of like everything was kind of lined up now for me to do the next thing. I know when I consider having a dog, I have a few friends that have them. And I knew it wasn't a light thing to think about, you know, like,
right.
you know, not quite like having a child, because we're not going to say the dog is like a child. But, you know, you don't just want to have another living thing, you know, a living creature, living being with you without being relatively sure that this is the right thing for you to do. And so I talked to the handlers that I know, and I said, you know, things are in place for me now to actually get the dog. And so I would just say that things lined up. It was time. And if that makes any sense, it was just time to do it.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense. So how did you
now,
decide
how did
on
the
school?
Yes.
What's that?
How did you decide? It's 16 different schools in the United States. How did you decide to go to CNI Guide Dog School in New Jersey?
So, yeah, So I kind of talked to the friends that I have that have dogs. It was a mix between the Seeing Eye in New Jersey and, you know, Guiding Eyes and a few other ones. And based on the behavior of the dogs that I've met from the Seeing Eye and also the handlers that I met from the Seeing Eye that are my friends, I thought it would just be the school that fit me. I also heard that the accommodations were first class in terms of, you know, they feed you three meals a day that are really tasty. And, you know, they You don't even have to make your own bed. They do that for you, too.
Right.
And it's kind of like a vacation slash boot camp, you know? And I'm like, oh, this is good stuff.
Yeah, top shelf, dude. I mean, yeah. I done got, when I met you, I was on my number 7th dog, and I have gotten all of them from seeing that guy at dog school and the top shelf. So, John, was it what you thought it would be when you got to CNI? Well, I mean, that's our music, so I want you to answer that when we come back on the other side. Was it what you thought it would be, good, bad, indifferent, or whatever? So this is Cagdo about your dog and you, and now we are talking about John and his dog, Mr. Igor. So back on the other side.
Well, you are listening to Cagdo about your dog and you. Cagdo is Capital Area Dog Guide Users, and we are located in the nation's capital. Our guest is John Pack, and he ensures that the mission safety box is checked off for the employees at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center located in Greenbelt, Maryland. Back over to our host, Reverend Radio Ray, and our guest, John Pack.
All righty. So, John, now, after arriving at CNI, well, first of all, where you work, and we'll get to that in a minute, there are other guide dog handlers and users, correct? So this
of
was
course.
Nothing new for your agency, what you was doing, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. So what was your expectation when you got to CNI, and just what was surprising, or was it what your friends told you it was? I mean, it never is once you jump right in it. But what was your impressions, and what was your expectations, and was they met or not?
So in terms of the actual first, you know, day at the school and everything, I was really amazed at how much dignity they showed for me. They didn't treat me like a child. They acknowledged, they treated me like an adult. And I know that sounds kind of silly, but, you know, in a lot of places that are disabled or schools for the disabled or programs for the disabled, they don't necessarily treat you like an adult, and they treated me like an adult at the CNI. And in terms of, you know, my expectations, I went into the CNI thinking, and even before I even applied for the dog, I thought I had to be like an orientation and mobility rock star, you know, and come to find out that I did not necessarily have to be a rock star at O&M. As long as I could figure out if I got into a bad situation, how to get myself out of it safely, that's kind of what they were looking for. But, you know, I initially had the impression that you had to be this, like, amazing O&M, perfect O&M, never mess up a street crossing O&M person. And, you know, I was the instructors there showed me that, no, we're not necessarily looking for O&M rock stars. We're looking for O&M safe people that can use O&M to figure out what they're doing and get out of it, a situation if it's not safe, in a safe way. Because ultimately, you know, your job is to keep you and the dog safe. The dog also keeps you safe too. But, you know, you have to be responsible for the safety of you and the dog.
Have you ever been with that many? I think we had 22 persons there. That many blind persons at one time?
I don't think so. Yeah, no, I don't think so. I think it's safe to say no.
Okay.
Well, can
and
I pivot
when you first
to work?
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Did you have another question? Follow-up question?
Yeah,
Ben?
Yeah. Let me ask. So what did you think of the routine? Getting up in the morning, I'm sure they told you got up early, your friends, and just the daily routine, did you find that strenuous? Did you find it challenging? Was it something that you just didn't think you were going to be going out with this dog twice a day and all the different places, the metro, you know? So how did you find that?
So I'm used to Air Force training, so I'm used to getting up before the sun. and going to bed way after the sun goes down. So that strenuous part didn't bother me as much. I think what did bother me was that Igor was I think 1.5 or almost 2 when I got him, and Igor had more energy than I did. So when we went on our trips, Igor would like travel down at like 80 or 90 miles per hour down the sidewalk, and I'm puffing and puffing like, you know, like, dude, I can't, this is hard, man. You got to slow down, man. Don't be so excited. In fact, it was Igor had so much pickup and go that I actually I visited the nurse just to make sure that, you know, I had some stretching to do for my legs and stuff to make sure that my feet weren't going to, you know, fall out. And that was strenuous. Now, I will say this. When I got back from the school, I confirmed that I lost 7 pounds. And that's
wow.
Something because the food is so tasty there and they give
yes,
you so much,
yes,
you know, as much as you want, that,
right.
that even though I lost 7 pounds, that means Igor worked me pretty good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Igor is a and what breed and size dog and color is Igor?
So Igor is a black lab golden retriever cross. So mm-hmm. one parent was a golden retriever and one parent was a labrador, a black lab. He is 68 pounds. And I forget how tall he is. I want to say he's either 22 or 24 inches tall. But yeah, that's his size.
Okay. And like you say, he is young, so he has a lot of energy. Go ahead, Ms. Renee.
Yeah. I have a question about your work. You work at Mission Safety NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center. Tell us a little bit about your work and how Igor enhances your work.
Sure. So first of all, I'll say that I started at NASA Goddard as a recruiter. And so I did a lot of college visits. I did, you know, looking for folks to work at NASA. And so I traveled a lot then. In terms
wow.
of what I do now, I do occupational health and safety for everyone at the facility, all our lab folks and scientists and engineers. And I do facilities management as well. And so Igor, for me, lets me travel a lot faster than I would on my own cane, you know, using my own cane. And he gives me the confidence. You know, Igor is a live being that has a brain of his own. And he doesn't want me to do anything crazy and stupid because he wants to live and so do I, right? So, you know, it's kind of like having a two-brain thing. It's a partnership. And
right.
I think, you know, one of the questions they asked at the school when I was applying for the dog is, you know, why do you want a dog? And I said, well, I believe that the dog will give me more confidence to do things that I normally would not do on my own. And I'll give you an example of that. I don't mind riding the metro. I do it, you know, when I need to do it. I don't like navigating through the metro station on my own, though. I mean, I'll do it. But when it's
right.
rush hour before the pandemic and you have, you know, a gazillion people, you know,
yes.
going through at 80 or 90 miles per hour,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's a little nerve-wracking. And I'm always afraid of falling off that platform. And
yep.
Igor treats people like, you know, he'll just go through, man. He doesn't care. If you're in the way, he'll go around you and zip through you like nothing. So, yeah. So I think that's, you know, pretty much how I would say what helps me with the dog is or having the dog is more self-confidence and an extra net of safety.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
I have a follow-up question. What do you believe that your unique view of the world contributes to your work?
Wow. I think that I am very, very attentive to detail. My wife says I have an amazing memory, and sometimes when she says, remember I told you, and I say, no, I really don't remember, she says I'm lying. because she says I have, you know, she's like, you just don't want me, you just don't want to remember what I told you. That's really what it is, right? But I do pay attention, you know, a lot to details. And for safety and occupational health and safety types of things, you have to pay attention to little details, because if an accident does occur, or we have to investigate one, every little thing that happened before the accident is really important, because it could be that one little thing that caused a problem. And I think because of my attentiveness to detail, you know, that kind of helps me do my job better. I also will say that, and no disrespect to my sighted counterparts, but a lot of people, when they read email, they don't really read their emails all the way through. They kind of skim through it real quick. And true. I, because of JAWS, you know, and I have to listen to everything, I make sure I read my emails all the way through. And there'll be one little technical thing that somebody may have missed that I did not. And, you know, that could make or break a situation.
Wow.
Well, John,
wow.
Let me ask you this. That's a unique job that you have. And giving, and that's the music we're going to get ready to close with. Real quick, I want to ask you this, and I really appreciate you coming on with such short notice. You've been a great guest. But given that 90% or more of people in the United States are 65 million unemployed, and the few that are less, they make less than probably $10,000 a year. So how did you get the job that you have? How did you even know about the job or get it?
Do you want me to wait for the other side, or do you want
No. That's ending the show. But so I want you to answer that before we let you go.
Okay. Real quick, I was working for Verizon, and I was not happy there anymore. I sort of decided to take a couple of days off before I, you know, kind of threw a temper tantrum at work. I went to a job fair. I met somebody, and they picked me up in a couple of weeks. So that's the quick and dirty.
You kidding?
Wow.
Okay. Well, John, thank you so much for being our very special guest, you and Mr. Igor. And I just look forward to doing other things with you. And I really love your energy. And Renee, he's a prankster. Also, towards the end of our class, he was on the intercom in the morning doing things to get us up. So I want to thank you for that, adding that to the job.
Yeah, no problem.
So, John, thank you very much, and say hello to your wife, Ann, and we really, really appreciate this. And this is all. This show also will be posted on our website, CAGDU, about your CAGDU.org, so people will be able to listen to the show forever, ever, ever, and amen. So thank you very much. Ms. Renee, any parting words for our guest?
Well, I just can't wait to meet his wife. She sounds like an absolute delight.
You mean the second time to meet her?
Yeah, but I mean to get to know
you met her.
Yeah. No,
she
means to get to get some conversation. Yeah, some conversation. Now, John, not your year, but what's your birthday?
April 30th.
April 30th. Oh, okay. All right, John. So thanks very much. We appreciate it very much, and we will be talking to you. So we salute you and thank you. All right. God bless you.
Thank you so much for having me.
All righty. Okay, so Miss Renee, that wraps up another wonderful show, and boy, that was really interesting, really, really interesting, the occupation and the person.
Absolutely, we need to have him on again, but got to let listeners know that they have been listening to CAGDU, About Your Dog and You, the Capital Area Dog Guide Users, and we are located in the nation's capital. We are heard here every Friday at 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Savings Time. Have a question or a show idea? You can contact us in all the usual ways. Our email is cagdu2020@gmail.com. That's cagdu, cagdu2020@gmail.com. Or give us a call at 301-263-7371. Close us out, Reverend.
And we will close with our tagline that you can hug your honey, but please pet your poop. Your pooch. God bless and be blessed.
We may or may not see you next week, depending about the FCC thought about that one.
I don't think that's one of the seven words. God bless. Until next week, God bless everyone.